Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. If you've ever felt like your crews work hard, but the margins are still kind of suffering, you're not alone. And according to today's guest, traditional hourly pay actually might be at the root of it all. Michael Fortenberry is the co-founder of Protiv, a performance-based pay solution built specifically for contractors. In this episode, he's going to lay out the simple but powerful framework to amplify productivity of your team all through incentive-based pay. He walks us through how performance-based pay actually shifts crew behavior and the step-by-step system that we can all use to drive productivity, boost morale, and protect our bottom line. So let's get into it with Michael. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Michael, welcome to the show.
Absolutely. I couldn't be more happy to be here. Just for clarity, so everybody's aware, this is multiple times we've now recorded this.
This is the second start to the take.
Yeah, second start to the day. And we've been talking for 30 minutes about kids and teenagers and fun stuff.
I've enjoyed talking to you. Like I said, prepping for this week of filming, you're the one I've talked to the most. So you're not only going to give us lots of wisdom on performance-based pay and the thing you've created, Protiv, but I feel like you're a wealth of knowledge, my friend. So you've been through a lot in life. And why don't we start there? Like, you come from a construction background. You've now invented a piece of technology that helps solve performance-based pay on sites. Yeah. Give us a bit of kind of how you came to this conclusion. And actually, I'm very curious of all the things you could have done post-business, why you chose this to start. So
yeah, gosh, okay, there's like 9 questions there. So let me, one at a time. So the reason I do this is because I can't get paid enough to sail. So if I could just go around on a sailboat, I'd be super happy. And I'm happy to do that. If anybody's got a really strong mid 6-figure job for me sailing, that'd be great. And I'll walk out of here tomorrow. But since that's not quite available to me, I need a day job. I don't know, maybe I should blame my dad. My dad was an electrician. And I think a lot of people in construction, contracting in general, we get started somewhat down this road because dad did it in some way, right? We get some entry into this space that says, oh, you can do something with your hands. Not that I've done that my whole career, but I'm comfortable with it. Yeah, and he didn't want to go up in the attic in Florida in the summer and pull Romex. So that's what his two boys were for. So, you know, he'd just leave us out of the job site. Our performance pay was, I'll come get you when you're done, you know, and there was no phone. So I didn't know how he knew that when that was going to be. So, you know, it's just, he would just kind of show back up later and see if we were done. If we weren't, he would just leave and we were still working. But that was performance pay back in the mid 80s.
I remember my friend's stepdad used to have us go and pick out big rocks from the driveway that were in way of his flat dirt driveway. And his pay at the end was when he said we were done and we would get a bottle of pop, a movie, and a bag of chips. And we would work all day, or what felt like all day anyways.
Yeah, it's probably like an hour.
Yeah, probably.
It's, you know, but I think good things come from those experiences. I think you develop a little bit of work ethic, some problem solving, those kind of things that will serve you well later in life. I think the part that a lot of contractors struggle with, and this is where you guys, I think, provide a big platform, is just because I can paint something or wire something or plumb something doesn't mean I can run a business. And I think I was very fortunate because I ended up with a bit of a corporate career. And post-Army, I was very entrepreneurial. I started a couple of businesses, but then had a corporate career. So I got some kind of business experience, everything from core sales, core marketing, core operational type skills, that then as you go and pivot back into, okay, let's build a construction company, some of the things that are sometimes hard for a contractor to do were much more natural to me. And so when you can combine this business skill set with a trade, I think you're well positioned to create a great company.
Yeah, this has been the foundations of Breakthrough Academy, and everything that we do on this podcast every day is just trying to find out the business of contracting, because that's, it's an area that there's a lot of profitability. There's a lot of opportunity and money to be made in this industry. There's a lot of unprofessionalism here that needs to be upgraded. And for those who can stitch that together and create a professional environment within the contracting space, you've got a winning combination.
You do. It's interesting because we face a lot of risk, right? And if you're not running your company smart, the risk you face from everything, from the way that the job is bid, the way it's executed, your just structural liability risk associated with things like workers' comp and people getting hurt, working with GCs that may or may not have your best interest. And, you know, so there's this whole series of risks that we take for sometimes a pretty low margin. So if you're going to build something successful within the space, I think it's incumbent on you to execute well, to have good processes, structures, tools to ensure that you are minimizing risk, ensuring you're pricing correctly, ensuring you're managing that workforce correctly so that you can survive those low margin moments that doom many contractors.
When your entire contracting business is full of fires, which one do you put out first? This quiz will give you the answer, plus a step-by-step guide to actually get it done. Just take 5 minutes to answer some questions about your business, your leadership style, and your habits. Then you're going to get instant access to a personalized guide with recommendations based on our analysis of over 1,900 rapid growth contractors. You're going to learn which of the four phases of contractor growth you're actually in. Is it operator, manager, leader, or strategist? How your business stacks up in six core areas compared to industry benchmarks. And what to actually go do next, including customized resources, tools, and templates you'll have access to right away. No waiting around for some email or filling out a million separate forms. If you've got big goals, but no real plan to actually get there, take 5 minutes to fill this quiz out. It'll be the quickest and highest impact thing that you'll do for your business all day, I promise. The link is in the description, so go check it out. Now, back to the episode. So after years of being in this space, you decided to start something called ProTiv, which is a piece of software that handles, I guess, labor wage and how it's paid out. Which, you know, you and I both know, and everyone listening probably knows, like your cost of labor is likely to be the highest cost you're going to have in your business.
All the time.
It's the biggest piece of your chart of all your chart of accounts is the biggest number. What brought you to this conclusion to build this? Explain kind of what it is. We're going to get into a whole bunch about performance-based pay today, but like, why did you choose to do this of all things besides sailboating?
So my co-founder, David, had some of the similar experience to you in the College Pro College Works painting world, where there existed a version of a performance pay environment. So as we've got our construction company here in New York and we're growing, and he had that kind of background. And it started on a project. We still, to this day, run this. It's a large scale multifamily renovation company. So we're renovating apartments in New York City, right? So you've got a building, it's got 1,000 apartments, and we're basically doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. The construction's not overly complicated, but it's very logistically challenging. There's really tight time frames. And if you can imagine, quality is really critical, because doing this when it's empty is easy. The minute I don't do it right now, someone's moved in because they've got these move-in dates. Now I'm working back in an occupied apartment if I didn't do something right. So quality standards were very important. So being on schedule, doing it right, critical. So I've got this budget. And I think we had around 10 hours budgeted for the cabinets. And about $400, I think about $40 an hour-ish for our carpenters here. Just call it $400 we're paying out to the workers for installing the typical set of kitchen cabinets. They're taking like 10 hours to do it. The problem is, when I really look at my schedule, I need this done in 8 hours. I'm trying to stack people together, right? I'm trying to get my tile guy coming and get the finish guys coming. All these different roles are coming into this really tight 2-week renovation schedule. And these guys are they're kind of bleeding to the next day, which is chaotic. So it was basically like, guys, you've got $400. I'll give you the whole $400, but you can please be done in one day and do it right. As long as it's done right the first time, be done in one day. I'll give you the whole $400. Turns out they can do it in about 6.5 hours. So, okay, I guess I'm not a very good manager. I don't know what I'm doing, but they've got a different gear. And I guess my lesson out to a lot of folks listening is that your team has more capability and more capacity than you think they do. There is another gear that we have seen people hit. And so that kind of light bulb goes off, like, well, this is working. Can we do this at scale? All right, it worked on that one thing with that one team. Can we do this again? And turns out you can with Excel to a certain extent, but we grew a lot. We ended up 130 people in the field, I think. What you can't do is do it at scale in Excel with a lot of people doing lots of different tasks across different pay periods and different wage rates. This all got complicated to manage this incentive pay. And if they had a problem, I had to go back and charge them back because they didn't do it right the first time. And what if they did part of it and someone else did part of it?
All of a sudden, this gets complicated. Started to fall apart. Yeah. At scale. Now,
so I need software.
Yeah.
The reality is I need software. So I do what everybody else does. When you need something, I go Google. Now I've used AI, but Google, find me software for performance management, performance pay, incentive comp for hourly workers in the construction industry. Zero, nothing, crickets. Nobody's built it before. I'm like, okay, so we got to build it ourselves. Now, we had built some software on our own, which I would not necessarily advise most construction companies to do, but just the nature of the work we were doing, we kind of needed something that was more advanced than a work order, not as big as Procore, kind of something in the middle. Couldn't really find it, built some tools ourselves. So we were already kind of half pregnant at that point with the technology thing. So we just kind of went the rest of the way in and said, okay, we're going to build an incentive compensation tool for ourselves, just for ourselves. It was game changing. And we learned some things along the way. We got it wrong for a while, but when we got this dialed in, it was just game changing for us. And to the point where it fundamentally changed our net profit, like structurally, going from 3.5-4% to 7.5-8%.
Almost double.
It's just monumental. And it also created controls. Because when you can tie performance to comp, things like variations to your labor budgets get narrower. And execution gets more frequent. Like I'm going to execute consistently. Those kind of things were the outcomes from it that allowed us to operate more efficiently and compete with what we call Chuck in a truck, right? We've got Bob's out there with his van and he's very, very cost effective, cheap, you might say. Hard for me with 100 plus people in the field to be competitive, give someone no back end operating overhead. So how do I do that? I do that through being really super efficient. Anyway, that was our journey from contractor to, writing some software for ourselves anyways.
You said something earlier around this, like people have a hidden gear. They have the lower gear that you don't even realize is there. Based on even just the data that you've run so far, what is that percent wise in labor costs? Like what are we losing by not having performance-based pay for our laborers? Do you have a number to it?
It's very trade specific because different trades have different amounts of capacity for the workers' energy and kind of focus, teamwork, attention, detail to move the needle. Certain trades, painting, landscaping, call them very labor-centric trades, right? There's some energy involved. Cleaning is probably the highest one, right? You can clean a whole lot faster if you want to. We had a cleaning company that saw a 40% lift in production,
right?
For perspective. Now, that's not everybody's 40%, but seeing numbers in the teens, 15, 16, 18%, 14% in landscaping and painting is not uncommon at all. Very, very normative performance lift when you really dial people in on production-based incentives. So I think if you're looking at a commercial electrician, getting 8-9% lift, I think it's kind of in that range. We've got some big commercial electricians coming on. We have even more data on that later this year. But there just really depends on, how much can their energy drive. I think roofing is one that has really high ceiling on it.
Yeah.
It's going to
drywall, I'd imagine would as well.
Drywall, yeah, is a great, great point. 90% labor. It's just a heavy labor job. And if you want, you can get it done more efficiently.
And it makes sense, right? At some level, you're you're incentivizing the human brain up to be like, you're like, the question left with labor is like, why the f- bother? And yeah, you're answering that question being like, well, because you can determine your own income and your own future in life. It's up to you now. And you're putting the ball back in their court, which I think is great.
Yeah, it's not their money. Right now, when you have a labor budget as a contractor, you've gone and bid this job. You tell Mrs. Smith it's going to cost you $5,000 to do this work. You've got $1,500 in labor in it, or $2,000 in labor. That's not their money. They don't, I hate to break it to you, but they don't care about your money. We say that a lot because it's just not there. They care about their own money, and they are actually somewhat accountable to their peers, which is part of what makes this work in a team environment. When they're working together on a job, we have found workers will hold each other more accountable to the quality of what they do, their performance, their efficiency, their safety, if it's their collective money. That's why our incentive program is designed to be a team incentive, so that we get the whole team. I don't have enough eyeballs to watch what everybody is doing. What I want is my workers to watch each other. I want my team to feel like quality matters, because if we don't do it right, it costs us money.
Yeah, the whole team has a collective base of hours or dollars. I guess we'll talk about the structure of how you do this. Yeah. And based on who's producing what, everybody shares in the wins in the end, or the losses, depending on everyone produces together. And I wanted to get into this a little bit before we go too far down into how it works, but... So I've done, this is traditionally called piece rate is what we're talking about right now. Yeah. And when you try and do piece rate with an employee versus a subcontractor, you run into legal issues. Now I've watched the way you guys have designed your software. And for those who don't know what piece rate is, we could probably speak to that a little bit as well. But essentially it's you have a 100-hour job. Everyone has 100 hours that they could get. And if they do it 90, they still get paid 100. If they do it 110, they still get paid 100. That's essentially piece rate. How have you designed this to get around the legalities of overtime pay and things like that, to make sure it's still fair? Because it's more based in bonuses or something now, the way you've designed the software. Can you speak to that a little bit?
And that's actually a great question. We work with our attorneys. We hired literally the world's largest labor law firm. They have 400 attorneys that just do wage and hour work for perspective. And they analyze the labor laws across not just the US, but all 50 states individually, and then also Canada, to ensure that the way that we calculate incentives is compliant in every location. California is the toughest. The way that you have to do it is very specific. It's not illegal to pay people an incentive for performance. And even piece rate, depending on how you define it, isn't specifically legal. The problem is, if you try and do this in Excel, it is almost structurally impossible to do it correctly, especially when you start having longer jobs that span longer periods of time. So we solved that with software, and we validated the process that we use with Littler, who's our firm, and so that they've signed off that this is legally compliant, period. A lot of it has to do with the way OT gets calculated. There are some rules around what is considered a non-discretionary bonus and how that gets applied retroactively to their base wage if they worked overtime and they earn the bonus. It's not mathematically hard to do, but it does have to be done very specifically. And you have to have an audit trail that you did it correctly, which the software supports.
And you're the only software out there that does this, from what you told me.
I'm not aware of any other platform does it. QuickBooks can't do this. ADP can't do it. I know, because our attorneys are ADP's attorneys. Like they can't do it in their systems. It's not a compliant tool for OT calculations in a discretionary bonus environment.
So let's talk about the setup of this a little bit. What numbers do I need to know as a contractor to be able to do this? Do I need to know the budget for amount of labor that I've given? Do I need to know how many hours by section? Like
either one.
So give me some ideas. Like, what do I need to be able to have to be able to put this in and know, give somebody a goal on a job site?
So I think there's two things you need to have. One is, first, before anything else, you need to actually make sure you're ready to build a company culture around production. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. That's actually the first of the two main things you need to have. The second is, you do need to have some decent grasp on your numbers. If your estimates are all over the board and you're just kind of making up numbers or whatever, you're just kind of hoping you get it right, the performance, an incentive comp system like this can actually almost make it worse, because you're going to have your team now upset because you can't estimate well. The other thing you need to do is make sure your logistics are organized, because just like your financials, all part of your numbers, if you can't get materials there on time, you're pissing off your team, because they're thinking, wait a second, I was on, this is my money, and you're telling me you can't get the stone here for this project. Come on, boss. How am I going to make any money if you can't do your part? So you need to have your business somewhat operating. I won't say you don't have to be a buttoned up, super smooth shop, but you need to, you can't be chaotic. So once you have that, now I need a budget. Well, we start with a budget. When you bid a job, you should have some kind of a budget for your labor. Okay, I get it. Sometimes we will estimate things based on square feet or linear feet or some other metric that's just a number. And I know that I've got labor built into that number. Okay, what percentage of labor? If you don't know, QuickBooks probably knows. Just look at your last 3 years and what's your percentage of labor on your work, right? We can come to a number that says, this is my labor budget for a job. So if I think it's going to cost me a dollar in labor, what I want to do is show the team that dollar. So what our belief is, what we've turned into Protiv, is that the team has to see the number. So I have a budget and I say, I need to know, you know, I've got a dollar for this job. I'm going to show that to my team and say, guys, you have a dollar to do this work. It's right on their phone. They start working. You need to have some type of time tracking system in place. If you don't have any kind of time tracking, if you're just keeping your time on paper or they're texting your time in, you need to solve that first. In fact, you've probably got some points of gross profit just hiding inside of the fact that I know definitively they did not work from 9 to 5.
Those everyone's taking 15 minutes here and there. Everyone's taking that extra 15 here.
Yeah. The only time I know they didn't work is exactly 8 to 4. That's the only time for sure, 100%, that's not when they were there. So let's find out when they were actually there, because good job costing is one of the things. I'm sure you guys coach to this. Good job costing is one of the central things you need to be able to do if you're going to scale a construction company. That's just, it's a requirement. You know, you want to grow outside your own shadow, build your business, get your job costing under control. So to do that, you need to know how much time you actually spent on the job, how much labor. We're going to take your time data, once you have your digital time tracking. We don't care who you use, QuickBooks, BusyBusy, Jobber, can be built into BuilderTrend, any of those kind of tools. It's all great. Take that job cost, time tracking data, and we're going to know how much of that budget they've spent every day. So they had a dollar, they use 50 cents of it, there's 50 cents left over. They can look at it, are we halfway done with this job or not? We've used 50% of the budget. The crew gets to see this and follow that on their phone with our app. So they know, this is what I've been budgeted, this is what I've used, this is what I've left, and the crew knows they get to share in what's left over. This is where their brain comes to work. I don't know if you know this. In fact, a lot of folks out there may be surprised that you actually get a free brain with every employee. It's kind of cool. They do have one. Some are better than others, I'll grant you, but they do come with free brain. And the minute you can get them to actually use it, wow, good things start to happen. So I want them to look at that budget and see that delta between what they've spent and what's left and start to spend it on, because baby needs shoes or whatever. When they start to think like that, their behaviors begin to change. I can't emphasize this enough. A lot of people listening probably have had some type of bonus or something, a holiday, you know, bonus or Christmas bonus, what, annual profit share, whatever. The goal of a bonus program is to change behavior, not just to give away money. And your annual bonus does not change behavior on a Tuesday in April. I need them to work differently, and that's why I'm paying them more. So the direct connection between that behavior and their reward is the critical part. Those behaviors need to be reinforced. So we encourage people to pay bonuses at least monthly. If the crew can beat your budget, that dollar you had, if they do it for, you know, 90 cents or 10 cents left over, you're going to give them 75% of that. You get 7.5 cents going to that team. You need to pay that as frequent. Weekly is great. You know, the more often you can pay it, the better, because you want muscle memory. You want them thinking, I work different, I got paid more.
You're getting into like what I wrote down is like the three keys to keeping performance-based pay effective. And I guess you wrote, or I wrote from listening to you earlier, but simple, frequent, and transparent. Can you kind of explain each one of those?
Sure. So first of all, if you're going to develop an incentive program, this, I don't know, whether you're using our software, you want to try and do this in Excel, whatever, keep it simple. If it's not simple, if they, the minute that you confuse your team, they're, it's not changing behavior the way you want. Those, that really is, shines bright when you start to talk about gross profit or net profit type incentives, because they don't always understand how that's calculated and where are those numbers. I don't understand it. So simple, just simple. And that's why I like labor budgets, because they know what that is. They control that. The second thing is it actually needs to be transparent. They need to be able to see the actual numbers. So if you think you're going to have a bonus program, say, hey guys, I'm going to give you 10% of whatever I save, or 100% of whatever I save, I don't know, whatever it is, they don't believe you. They just don't, because they don't see the number. They don't know whether they actually beat it or not. So they're not changing their behavior. Oh, maybe they get a bonus, maybe they won't. They have to see it. We show it to them on their phone, transparent. Frequency is another part. If you are waiting too long to pay bonuses, then you're not creating the muscle memory. The behavior and the reward are too disconnected. This is a straight Pavlov's dog type psychology. You need to connect the things together so they understand, why did I get this reward? And so we try and make that very frequent.
Weekly, biweekly, I imagine, is per paycheck, ideally, is kind of how it should come up.
More often is better. And I understand that sometimes is challenging to do. We paid weekly a month in arrears. That was always our model, you know. And I wait a month because I want to make sure I don't have callbacks and quality issues, that I'm going to have deducts on those bonuses, because that's part of the process here. Is you got to be willing to deduct if you have callbacks or keep charging those hours to that job. So if you rush, it doesn't do you any good. We'll talk more about that. But then once they, you know, once they're kind of through that core warranty period, then just pay the money out. This is money you saved. So I want to emphasize, every time I use the word bonus, some people get cringy about it because they're thinking, well, it's costing me money. No, this is money you saved. You thought you were spending a dollar. You only spent 90 cents. That 10 cents is found money.
It's increase in productivity, which I think when we first started prepping, you had a bigger number than I had, but I read it was like $30 to $40 billion a year is vaporized in inefficiencies in construction sites. You said it's
$400 billion dollars a year.
$400 billion.
The amount of money. I think it was Association of Architects and Engineers or something had a number Procore used to banter about. 30% of all construction costs is waste. In fact, some people may say it's up to 50%. Could be 50% of all construction costs could go away if we were perfectly efficient. You know, did it all right perfectly the first time. This is just wild to think about on an industry that, you know, we're spending, was it $13 trillion a year globally? I mean, it's just it's a gigantic industry. We're one of the biggest industries in the world. And we're not getting much better at production and efficiency. It's all kinds of data. It's academic research on production challenges, productivity challenges of the construction industry. We have not levered up technology the way that other industries have to get more efficient. We've also added safety and environmental kind of controls around the way we build, which slow us down. So maybe for a good thing, but it doesn't make us faster. So we're actually not really more productive at building things today than we were in the 70s.
We need Elon Musk Department of Efficiency in our industry.
Oh, we could cut some costs out for sure.
So keep it simple, keep it clear and easy for them to understand. I'm getting budget on labor, either hours or the dollars available for that job. One of those two things. Keep it frequent. I'm being paid weekly or biweekly, ideally kind of when the check comes up, but you said a month in arrears to keep for mistakes and warranty, which we'll get into in a sec.
Not a bad plan. Yep.
And then keep it transparent so that they can see it at all times. So the way I used to do this was 20 years ago, but we had on the back of the work proposal, we basically had like Monday to Friday, we would put in our hours and then we would self-calculate and divide by everyone's hours how much we all got, which it did work, if I'm honest, but it was like three crews I was running, right? Yeah. So like you get a little bigger than that and things get nuts.
Did your team have overtime?
Yeah, and you know what? And so I will say the reason I asked that legal question is because I knew that we weren't always doing it properly. And
it's hard to do. Yeah. For perspective, the most industries in America, from retail, food service, et cetera, that have incentive plans are not doing it correctly either. So it's a big problem. It's funny, it's a big problem for those businesses, but it's too small for ADP and QuickBooks, et cetera, to go solve it.
Interesting.
So it's very interesting challenge. Who knows? It may end up being a future market for us because we can handle those things.
The other thing I just wrote down. So you brought this up about 5 minutes ago, but just on culture, you said the other thing that has to be in place is culture. Like, what do you mean by that? And B, how does this shift culture? Because I imagine it does.
I actually make the argument that the technical side of this is far and away the easy part. The culture side of it is actually where I think people can get tripped up. The key to pulling off a performance-based pay model is actually to want to have a performance-based culture. If you as an owner, if you look at your business and say, well, I want to create a personality for my company. A lot of people don't know what company culture means. It's just your company's personality. It should reflect who you are as a owner. So don't try and be something you're not. If you say, I want us to be festive as a culture and you're a grumpy guy, that's not going to work, right? So it's got to be genuine and authentic to who you are as a leader. But most entrepreneurs, most people who take the leap to go do this on their own have we tend to be performance-oriented people. That's why we took the risk on ourselves. That's a common denominator within entrepreneurs, is that they are personally high performers overall. If you want a culture that says, yeah, I want to reward performance, I want to celebrate performance. Okay, so how are you going to do that? And performance-based comp is a tool within there. But those are the kind of elements, cultural elements that matter. You've got to communicate more now. I've got to talk about numbers. I've got to be a slightly more open book. You know, I'll be full open book, but slightly more open book operating thing. I'm going to talk to you guys about my labor budget. Most construction companies probably never talk to their workers about the labor budget in the field. They may talk about deadlines, but they don't talk about budgets. So it rarely goes below the PM type level in most organizations. Numbers, dollars, right? I want you to talk about dollars. I want you to go to a job site and go up to your team and ask them if they're making money on this job.
I think about this term intrapreneur. You ever heard that term before?
Yeah.
Because as an entrepreneur, I'm out there trying to carve my own future in reality, and it's all about my ability to create reality and create value in the world. But for an intrapreneur, they work under me. They're not an employee, though. They work under me. They get to create their own reality within the sphere I've created for them. And so you're creating like a mini version of an entrepreneur, but they don't have to go and start everything from scratch. No. But they get to still control their own destiny within the rules of the game that you've set.
Yeah. You've had Bob come in your office and say, I want a raise. That's his version of starting his own company, right? I need a raise. I need to make more money. So I got to go, that's the closest they get, is trying to get a raise, or they want to work OT. So they slow down so they get some overtime. Yeah. That's their approach to raising prices, right? I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, so that's your employees just kind of operating that way. All we do is shift their thinking to being the way that they get what they want is by giving us what we need. It's become symbiotic.
So a lot of my friends are in the trades and they work for other companies, and I grew up with them all in high school, and we all talk about nowadays just their life and how they need to make more money and how they bitch about their boss and all this stuff. And one of the things I always say to them is, I'm always like, look, dude, like, I am the boss in a lot of ways, and I am the guy that people come to for a raise. The best thing you can ever do is, for those of you who are listening who are trying to figure out, how do I make more money in the job that I'm in? Do not go into the office and ask for a raise. Go into the office and say, how do I bring more value? And so in turn, I can make more money for the company. I can make more money for myself. How do we do that? And that's a very different conversation. And as an entrepreneur, it's almost like an exciting thing to have a sit down with somebody around. It's like, yeah, how do you bring more value? And what you're talking about, Michael, today with performance-based pay is you're baking that in. So that conversation doesn't have to come almost too late. It's like you're giving people that opportunity today. And it's a part of the culture and a part of the way the company operates.
You know, it doesn't work for every employee. I think some anecdotal numbers around this, but I bet it's a 95%, 92% of employees will lean into this. You're going to have, if you've got 10 people, you're going to have somebody quit.
Yeah.
They won't like the peer pressure usually. That's tends to be the genesis of their exit, because their peers can put pressure on them to perform, but they didn't really have that before. You will have two people out of your 10 that absolutely lose their mind and think this is the greatest thing ever invented. And, you know, they're just getting just so passionate about it. They really get into it. And others tend to get pulled up by that energy. And so it's not that every person starts obsessing over whether I'm making $27 or $27.50 on this particular job, but they all care a step more, because they do begin to recognize, especially because you got to talk about it. You got to run contests on it. You got to lean into it and make it daily part of the way you engage. If you're running something like EOS or something like that, it's got to get woven into your meeting structure, woven into your reporting. Start talking about how are you guys doing? How are you guys making money on this job? What are things operationally we need to do to help you to make more money? Are your materials there? You know, what can we do to help you at the job site to be more efficient, so that you guys can be, you know, under budget on this? You know, materials, safety. How do you need training to get better at the quality of what you do? What do you need?
Yeah, it's almost like your job is no longer to be everybody's boss. Your job is to be everybody's coach. And you got to get everybody to score the touchdowns and score the wins that they need to win to have their goals hit in their life. And all you're there to do is to help develop them over time. And ultimately, their win is your win. So you don't have to stop worrying about controlling them. It's like, I am here to coach and develop you so that you can hit your goals.
Yeah. And there's probably folks who feel a little, I don't know. I will share, because they think about our labor, our workforce, right? And they don't always give them the most props in terms of what their capacity is. I'm telling you, my friends, I have the same workforce you do. All right. We've got carpenters and painters and tile guys and all the same set of workers that everybody else does out there. And I promise you, there is a set of employees that you can build a company around where performance-based compensation can be the anchor of your success and growth. When you interview in a performance pay culture, it's the first thing you talk about. Because someone's going to come in and they're going to say, well, I'm the greatest carpenter ever. Well, it's $35 an hour. Well, I want $40 an hour because I'm so good. Well, we pay $35, but our best carpenters make $55 because it's performance-based incentives. And so if you're as good as you say you are, you're going to make a lot of money here. If they don't jump at that, they're not
real. You know, it's all just talk.
So it's almost, we got to the point where their reaction to our having a performance-based environment was almost the defining element of whether we give them a shot or not, not their history or skill set or number of OSHA hours they've completed. It's do they lean into that idea?
Right. It's part of the interview process, and it's almost like self-eliminating for themselves as well. I've seen this with a lot of people.
Yeah.
You spoke to this a little bit, but like team buy-in. So let's talk actually just about implementation of this. So like, okay, we've decided we're going to do this. We're going to set hours or dollar-based budgets that our labor crews are going to have access to now, and they're going to have a percentage of it. Maybe we use Protiv, maybe we use Excel, whatever, but we've decided to do this.
Yep.
Do you pilot this first to show it in a way? Like, how do you do this so you don't screw it up? Because you've even mentioned if you don't know your numbers, if you get the estimates wrong, like it can go wrong. So like, how do you implement this well? And with the clients you work with, where do you see the best version of implementation, and what are the steps?
Yeah, we run our system in the background without telling your employees first. So, and that's mostly to get the configurations correct and to make sure you know how you're performing today. So our new version, we just launched last week, has a far more robust capacity to absorb data. So we're actually pulling our client's entire history of project data. Everything, if you've been on BuilderTrend for 10 years, I want 10 years of BuilderTrend data. I want 10 years of QuickBooks time data. I want 10 years worth of Aspire data. Well, as much as you've got in there, we're going to pull it all in, and we're going to analyze how you've been performing for a bunch of kind of unique factors that we look at in our system. Basically, how often are you hitting your budgets? Think of it in a superficial way like that, at a greater level of detail.
I imagine too, you're getting a law of averages. You're seeing this is on average the productivity of your team versus your estimates, so that you can start to understand where zero point is, where normal is, where the goal should start.
Yeah, and you see it in your accounting data, but sometimes the accounting data is presented financially in a way that is a bit disconnected from how did I perform specifically across my jobs and budgets, and how are we trending? what percentage of the time do we finish on budget, over budget, on budget, you know, under, over, whatever. I want to know in detail. So once I begin to dial that in, we're looking at how you're actually performing right now. If you were paying bonuses, would anybody be making bonuses? So how much money would you be distributing? Some, a little, none? So there's a lot of insight that we gain from that before you ever start launching the program. What's interesting about testing it is you actually, there's a downside to a test in that the test, number one, employees think, well, maybe it's going to go away. And so how much am I really going to lean into it? But the thing that actually makes this work is that you make it a big part of your culture. So how are you going to make a test a big part of your culture? So I would actually recommend to people, take your time analyzing your data. And once you're ready and comfortable that, okay, I understand how this is going to work, what the numbers are going to look like as I go to my team with it, then launch in a big way. And don't, it's like, we're not sticking our toe in this. We are deciding to be a performance-based culture system. We're deciding to be a performance-based system. So now we know what our numbers look like in advance. We're going to make a big deal of this to the team. So take more time prepping and then launch in a big way.
You would talk to me during our prep call around this, but how do you win over a skeptical crew? So they're like, yeah, sure, but like, I just want my pay, please. Yeah.
Well, feel free to not participate.
You would talk to me about how you're like, you're going to do that, but then you're also going to show them what they could have made and you're going to show them.
Yeah, so you can't do that. Yeah, that's a great point. Thanks for reminding me that. There's sure, you can actually just show it to them on their phone. Well, okay, well, you guys didn't make that money. All right, well, good luck. Maybe next week.
So you continue tracking it just as if they were being performance-based paid, but you don't pay
this
them.
This is what we're doing as a company. Yeah. So I don't actually care if you're skeptical, because as a company, philosophically, don't come and ask me for a raise anymore. If you want a raise, just bring the jobs in under budget. The only thing that happens when you give Bob a raise is that your costs go up. Raises do not change worker behavior. Just don't. They're statistically proven to kill that idea if you have it in your head. If you give them a raise, they do the exact same amount of work before, during, and after the raise.
Have you ever seen
them a raise in the middle of the day? They're doing the same thing in the afternoon they were doing this morning. So it just doesn't shift behavior. So what is the point? If you want to give them a raise, build it onto the performance. What have they delivered?
Right. I was just thinking about this documentary a long time ago. You ever seen the documentary called Happy?
Oh, what?
It's about our normal set point. So when we don't have food, shelter, you know, warmth, if we don't have these basic things, we're super motivated to get them and we're super unhappy if we don't have them. But once we get them, the ability to become more happy is fleeting, is short-lived. So when you get that new car, that new boat, that new house, it doesn't make things any better. So you, for a short period of time, get high dopamine hit and then it goes back to normal point. And the problem is you have more to lose now. So now that you have all these things, you can actually get more depressed easier than the person that had less to get to. So anyways, it's the same thing in pay. It's like once you give them that raise, you'll get a bump in productivity for a couple months because they'll be like, thanks, boss. Like, that's amazing. But you see it time and time again, 2-3 months in, that becomes their new normal set point.
I don't know, man. Bezos doesn't look too depressed to me. I'm just saying. He may have more to lose, but that dude seems pretty happy.
I don't know, ask him. I don't know, maybe. But
I mean, this guy's got being a billionaire figured out. All the rest of them are still working, you know, and he's like, nah, I'm going to go on my boat.
He's got time and money. Something that I think is true happiness. But I do think as like the lizard brain that motivates us to do things in life does take what we have. And although it was new and shiny and awesome that we got that raise, that we do normalize it after a few months,
sure,
not long. So, okay. So we talked a little bit about team buy-in. This is not for every role, is it? I mean, I find even in my company, we have bonus structures for some of the administrative roles, some of the support roles.
Sure.
And it's like, it's okay, but you can tell it's not quite as powerful as like the sales roles, the production roles, the field labor roles. Do you want to speak to that? Like what roles does this work well for? What roles does this not?
I think it's because we break the connection between the behavior and the reward.
Yeah.
And there are jobs where it is hard to document a lift in performance. Now, okay, if I'm an AP AR clerk, I'm not sure what I'm going to measure my accuracy, the speed at which I do my data entry. I don't know. I'm not sure, to be honest. So maybe there's a great model for
We've set this up, like even in our models, we'll say, hey, keep AR below 5% to help with cash flow, have reports in within 24 hours. So there are absolutely things you can do. And I do think that they're okay to do.
It's okay.
I just don't think they pack the same punch when you have a direct input result control over your work and your result. Is that fair to say?
Also, I think that hourly workers in the field are also a bit more sensitive to the opportunity to earn a couple dollars an hour more. If I make $22 an hour, getting me to 25 is actually a pretty big deal. I wear my hourly rate like a badge of honor. And so that's, in fact, in our software, we show them their effective hourly rate with bonuses because that's how they think.
Right.
In fact, that's how they believe that you value them. So if I'm paying Bob 20 and I'm paying Sam 21, you know why we don't show people their wages? Because they think we favor someone else over the other. The primary reason we don't share wages with people and they can't know what everybody else makes. Because, well, why does Bob make $21? I only make 20. You like him better? You know, why? He cleaned your truck on the weekends? What is he doing?
It's how they establish value.
So, they've established different value. And I actually don't mind giving raises to people now because I know exactly what they produce. So if they're making 22, but on the incentive comp, they're consistently making 25 and it makes them feel better to get a $23 an hour base. No problem. I was paying you 25 anyway. Your bonus is now a little bit less. You have to manage to those kind of things. But frankly, the number of people walking in your door asking for a raise will probably drop to zero. It's already getting it.
Yeah, they're controlling it. So one thing I used to deal with too was quality issues. So sometimes jobs weren't finished, even though they said they were, and they maybe even collected the check from the customer and now they've moved on, they got to come back. How do you handle quality issues post-job to make sure that there's still accountability and people aren't just ripping through stuff to get them done? They look good on the surface, but everything underneath is crap. Like, how do you manage this?
Yeah, it's got to be, they've got to feel like it's their money at risk if they don't do it right. Because the reason we care about quality is because it's going to cost me money if we have to go back. So I actually have a carpenter on video. His name's Frank. And he said the quiet part out loud, which I'm surprised he said this on video. But he said, my approach to quality changed when I went on ProPays, which is what we call our bonuses, because it cost me too much money to go back. Mm-hmm. I was like, huh. Well, Frank, welcome to our world. You know, that's the way we see it. We see quality issues as a function of, it's going to cost me a lot to go back. It costs me, if I have to go back and fix something, I probably just broke even on the project, right? I mean, that's, if I have to go back twice, I'm probably losing money. It's such a big deal. Rework is the bane of construction. So if I can get my crew to believe that if they don't do it right, it costs them money. They will look at each other and hold each other accountable to doing it correctly. Their teamwork and communication on that are the key to getting them to deliver a higher level of quality. So you have to talk about it. Just like we talk about the budgets, we're going to talk about quality. Let's make sure we do it right. Make sure the customer is going to be happy. We don't want to have to come back. It's just going to cost us. Now, systematically, what our software does is if they go back to that job, to that work ticket, the job still open, they go up to go back a couple of days later, they're still using the hours that they had budgeted. So it's just, they're seeing their bonus go down.
And you said something smart to me when we were prepping. If it's now gone past, you've already paid out that bonus on that job. Yeah. There is a net deficit they can acquire months ago. Let's say, thing has to be fixed. There's a deficit now created for your next job that you have to outwork.
That's correct. The software supports that. Some companies use it more aggressively than others. It just kind of depends on how you want to structure it, how long you think your warranty, issues kind of need to be managed against the incentives. Look, you get a call back a year later because a tree died as a landscaper. I don't suggest you go and ping your guy because he buried the thing upside down and, put the leaves in the ground. I don't know, maybe. But they have to believe that they need to do it right. Their capacity, again, is to do it right and do it more efficiently. It's in them to do so. We think that it is probably around 15% for a lot of trades, probably 8, 9, 10% for other trades, is a reasonable lift in execution production, quality execution production, safe execution production. We think that is a reasonable gap that can be closed. I don't think that your painters are going to be 35% more efficient. If they are, then you're giving them way too much time. But there is a space in there that And you can tell the difference if you just look at your best teams versus your average teams, let alone your worst teams. If you've got four crews, one of them is fundamentally better. I know this is true with everybody listening. You've got four people, one of them is better. How much better? Are they 10% better? Are they 15% better? Are they 20% better? Some of that is skill, and some of it is because they care. They're intrinsically motivated. I'm going to give you an extrinsic tool to close that gap on motivation so that we get performance closer to our A team.
Let's talk about that for a second. What do you do when you roll this out? And I've had this happen, actually, where I've had some of my crews beating budgets by over 50%. How do you handle that?
So the software does have a bit of a shock absorber in it. That's one of the reasons you should be testing this ahead. We just test it quietly to make sure you're not way off. Probably want to know if you're beating budget 50%, but maybe you just have a job that's got a lot of money in it and you don't really want to split all of that out. You know, you're rich on this job for whatever reason. Okay. So the software lets you give the team in the field a smaller budget to start with. So they don't see your actual bid. They just see the budget you give them. So if you say, well, I know on this job, it should only cost them about $800, but I actually have $1,000 in labor. Just give the team $800, see if they can beat it. They get it done for $750. They make more money. You've protected. It also has a shock absorber in that you can split the savings. We call it a bonus pool with the crew. So if you don't really know and you've budgeted $100 for labor and they do it in 50, but you're set up to split it 50-50, the savings with them, then your labor costs come down $25. $25 goes to them. Yeah, okay, that's pretty rich to the crew, but okay. Let's try and get our estimating dialed in a little bit better.
That's an estimating issue.
Maybe talk to your estimator about the difference between feet and meters.
Is that fair to say too? Like, I've seen it the opposite, where crews are falling really short. Like they're doubling budget time. What do you do in these instances?
Oh, and I think that's actually the trickier thing to solve. Okay, why are we way off on this? Uh-huh. If I'm 5% off. Okay, there are a lot of things that might cause that. You start to be way off on your estimates for labor. You probably need to have someone else come and look at your estimating, really process your, is it because your materials aren't there? Do you have the wrong tools? You're not using the right tool for the job. It's a big one I see all the time. Simple thing to say, hard thing sometimes to get right. Use the right tool for the job, or sometimes the right team, et cetera. Does everybody have what they need? Do they know how to do this job efficiently? Right. Why? You will really want to know why. And I would probably take a really deep look at performance pay until you're a little bit more under control in the way that your estimates are coming in.
I'll tell you, I remember it. So my prep budget used to be way too little for what the crews actually needed. So they'd always go way over on their prep, and I could see it. And I realized I was not allocating enough time to prep. Yeah. But the funny thing was they were my second coat for this is all painting. My second coat for painting, they would always just crush because of the way they used to paint.
The prep was great.
So it evened out. And when you look at the whole job, they were fine. Yeah. But when I went into the details and actually looked at the per sections, I realized hey, I need to A, put more time into prep, and B, I need to put actually a little less time on for these guys to do their second coats because they're ripping through them real fast. Yeah. And it adjusted my estimating. And in the moment—
You want to know.
Yeah.
You want to know. Don't guess. Go and know these numbers. If I was doing this again from scratch and you're out there and you're listening and you've got, you're starting, you've just come out of your own shadow and you got your first team in the field kind of doing work, and you need to master your numbers. It's just, that is fundamental to running a construction company. If you don't, you're in trouble. And you need to think about what kind of culture you're going to build. Assuming you know how to do your trade, if you will get your numbers right and build a culture, you'll win. It's not an impossible industry in which to be successful. It's just story after story of how you do this. And they all kind of come back to people who built really cool cultures and manage their numbers well. It's not that complicated. And there are tools out there to help you do that. And programs out there, I would suggest BTA.
Yeah, anybody over, I'd say, a million, it's time to grow up and put on your big boy pants or big girl pants. And
that's a good number.
Get to know your numbers.
I agree.
I do think when you're smaller, it's okay to just get away with it because you're managing everything yourself. But when you get up and over a million, it's your responsibility as an entrepreneur to I don't care if you don't like numbers. I don't care if you're not good with Excel. If you're going to keep trying to grow, and that is the motto, it's time to get good at your numbers. I would agree with you, Mike. Let's finish it off here. What's like just one takeaway you would want for everyone? And maybe it's what you just said about numbers, but what's one thing that you want everyone to take away from this and just to think about leaving this conversation?
Good one thing. I want to talk about 10 more things. I
don't know. You want to talk about some more stuff? Just keep going.
I think if there's one thing out there, it's that I'm going to leave people with an idea around what it means to taking care of your people versus taking care of your customer.
Sure.
Because I've heard this one pop up, I think the wrong way a few times recently. And people say, well, we're customer first. And I'm going to suggest as you, especially again, to your point, grow past that $1 million number, it's not the right mindset anymore. You need to be your people first. And that's a funny, it's easy to say, right? But it's a funny thing to understand what that really means. What does it mean to put my people first? That means you need to be listening to them, but it's bi-directional listening, right? You know what I mean? It's absorbing what they're saying, listening to what they need, helping your people get what they want. So if you're building your team out there, lean heavily into what do they want in their life personally? Do they want to have their own shop? Do they want to master their trade so work is easy? Do they want more time off with their kids? Do they want to make just more money? They want to work a lot of hours. What do they want? And how do you help them get what they want? It's this old Zig Ziglar quote, right? If you help enough people get what they want, you can have whatever you want. Lean into that. Think about what it means to be a people-first organization that cares about your team. And if you care about your team will take care of your customer. You don't have to worry about that part anymore because you're taking care of them. Their job is to provide that service, which takes care of your customer, which is who pays you, which takes care of your financials. Right. So lean into that cycle of your team, and you're on a good path to be able to get from that 1 million to that $10 million number. You know, as you add zeros to that organization, your life looks a lot different.
You're speaking to something I always think about, which is like, don't create transactional relationships at work. And it's such a hard thing to do because fundamentally everything we just talked about even was about like hitting a budget and having a number and, but don't make that the why behind everything that you do every day. And it's about your people. Yeah.
Productive is a tool for you to facilitate a type of culture in your organization. It is not the culture. So it is for you to facilitate performance-based incentives in general are a tool to lean into your culture with. So I would encourage people to define who you want to be as an organization, the kind of personality you want your company to have, and go build that. Attract people to that that want to be part of it. And you're on a good path to adding that next zero to that revenue.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you. If people want to reach out to you, did you have a link we want to put in the description too? Something about an ROI calculator? Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I'm going to get you guys do I need to give it to you now or get you guys a link?
Give it to us post show, but just for everybody, explain what it is and we'll put it in the description for everyone.
Yeah, we've got a little guide we wrote up on how to get an ROI from performance-based incentives. And happy to share that with people. If people just have questions about this, michael@protiv.com, I'm happy to talk to people. If you just have questions about, I don't know how to get my accountant to get my books to me at the right time of the month, I don't know. I'll talk to you about whatever you want. If you've got challenges in building your company, if you're trying to find a way to scale and you want some great coaching around you, good breakthrough. So
that's why we're here. Michael, you're a wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate it. Just prepping with you and getting to know you and actually continuing to get to know you over the next little while. I want to keep chatting with you. So thank you for what you're doing for this industry. Thank you for building Protiv and thank you for just sharing liberally. You're awesome, man.
We're leaning heavy into what Breakthrough is doing. And I just think you guys are just scratching the surface of your potential. So super exciting.
Likewise with you. We didn't get into it today. You got a big vision for what you're up to. So I'm excited to see that come to life.
There's a whole nother gear coming on this, which is, we'll get into that another time.
Let's do it.
Another step.
Have a good week, man. Okay. Have a good week, everybody. Really. See you. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.